Blog Talk Radio.
From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting from Palmer, Alaska, and we are in the middle of spring here in the Matsu Valley, and I'm here with, calling in from the Hudson Valley of New York, Dorothy Wills Raftery, calling in about the Side Vibe. Dorothy, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It's a busy time right now. We're very much, immersed in some canine epilepsy awareness that is really the focus of today's show, and we'll get into it. But, it's been – I actually just ran in here about 2 minutes before call time because we've been doing a lot of stuff over on the Five Sides Facebook page and on the web for Purple Day, which we'll get more into talking about. And I actually haven't even gotten my blog article finished yet, which will be going up this evening.
It is a busy time of year. We're winding down mushing season. We got just a race or two left here on our side. But, boy, I tell you what, spring is fast approaching, and we're rocking and rolling up here in Alaska.
That's wonderful. I mean, we have a little bit of we had some nice spring weather, and then today we actually took a step back, and it's pretty bitter here today. So we're just kind of wondering what's going on with Mother Nature, but I'm sure it's all going to get, ironed out as we go on. So hopefully we'll get some actual real spring weather soon.
Now, I hope so.
I hope so, too. It's been strange this year, hasn't it?
It sure has. For you folks down there, you guys received a lot of our weather, and up here we were quite mild for most of the winter.
Yeah, we really did. Where I am in the Hudson Valley, depending on where you're located, a lot of us got between 3 and 4 feet of snow this year. And
wow.
That's not typical for this area for a long, long time. I mean, many, many years ago, we used to have winters like this. But, I'm sure with global warming and everything, it kind of changed. And, this year, I think everybody was like, a real winter, a real New York winter.
Wow. So what do we have today here on the Side Vibe?
We have lots and lots of things to talk about, and we have a really special guest that we're going to talk to, Susan Sehi Smith, and she's with our Pause to People, Bridges to Cures organization, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and she's also the mom to an Epi Fur Angel, the Mighty Quinn, and we're going to get into talking to her, and I'm going to introduce her in just a few minutes, but I did have a couple things I wanted to talk about and just kind of give just a brief history of what Purple Day is to some of our listeners who may not be familiar with it. It's actually International Purple Day for Epilepsy Awareness, for which I'm an official Purple Day ambassador here in New York, and I've been one since 2012. I'm very proud to be part of that. And as such, I help spread the word and educate folks about canine epilepsy awareness. Excuse me. And just a little background, compliments of purpleday.org. It was founded in 2008 by then 9-year-old Cassidy Megan of Nova Scotia, Canada. With the help of the Epilepsy Association of Nova Scotia, Cassidy chose the color purple because in some cultures the lavender flower is often associated with solitude, which is representative of the feelings of isolation many people feel affected by epilepsy and seizure disorders. Cassidy's goal for people with epilepsy everywhere is to know that they're not alone. And to learn more about Cassidy and Global Purple Day Partners, which is, again, the Epilepsy Association of Nova Scotia and also the Anita Kaufman Foundation, you can visit www.purpleday.org. And you can also visit for the Anita Kaufman Foundation would be akfus.org. And folks can also go visit our Five Sides YouTube channel, and I'd like them to check out the Purple Day for Canine Epilepsy video. And that features many beautiful epi dogs and epi fur angels from across the world. And in the current issue of American Pet Magazine, there's also an article I have on Purple Day that folks can either read online or via hard copy. Just visit www.americanpetmagazine.com and look for the Volume 3, Issue 1, with Buddy the Christmas Husky on the cover. And it's filled with great info, and on page 38 is my Purple Day awareness article.
Awesome.
So I would also like to, again, mention that a percentage of proceeds from my illustrated book, What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy, is donated to the Canine Epilepsy Resources Emmys Fund, which is through the North Carolina State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. And the book features great and fun illustrated characters of my five sides, created by artist illustrator Michelle Littler. And the book helps children not only understand what's happening to their dog when a seizure happens, but it also has some tips that a child could do to help parents care for a dog with seizures. And when children feel that they can help out, we all know that some of the fear sometimes from the situation is removed. And that book can be ordered through our indie publishing house, which is ArticHousePublishing.com. And in other canine epilepsy awareness news, I told you there's a lot going on today, right?
Yes, it is.
Ken and Ralph of Eat Away's Bakery, which is home to the House Wolf Canine Dog Biscuits, they've just been named Purple Day Ambassadors for Vermont. And as many of our fans already know, their dogs already love House Wolf formulated the House Wolf formulated a special wholesome treat with the Epi Dog's diet in mind, which are called Gibby Snacks, which a lot of folks know were named after Mike Gibson. And these treats are a favorite among Epis and non-Epis alike. And with every bag that's purchased through their online store, not just today, but for the life of the treat, House Wolf will donate $1 per bag to the Wally Foundation for Canine Epilepsy. If people aren't sure, you can visit thewallyfoundation.org and it's thewallyfoundation.com, and they offer possible financial assistance to parents, fosters, and rescues of dogs diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy. And to order the Gibby Snacks, you can visit House Wolf's online store at www.housewolfk9dogbiscuits.com. And just be sure to tell them that the Five Sides sent you over. And before we introduce today's guest, I have a really very special announcement to make that I think is especially fitting for Purple Day. And in conjunction with my Five Sides Live Give Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness Campaign, last March I put out a call for submissions of stories and photos about epi dogs. And I received close to about 100 stories, Robert, about these amazing warriors, who live with seizures. And some of them are epi angels. A lot of them are dogs who are still currently living and loving life. And I actually want to announce the title, which is now Epic Dog Tales, and that's capital EPI for Epi. And it's heartfelt stories of dogs living and loving life with canine epilepsy. And that's going to be published through Artic House Publishing. And at this point, we're currently in layout and some of the final stages of editing. We still have one more round yet to go before it goes to print. But I thought it would be really fitting to make the formal announcement of the book today. I had originally hoped we would be having it out to publish today, but it's such an important project and we're so close that I really don't want to rush it. Hopefully it'll be in the very near future, and I'll be putting more announcements out, and I'll be posting the cover today on Facebook and also on our blog. And a percentage of that book post-production costs will be donated, the same as with the What's Wrong with Gibson book, to the Canine Epilepsy Resources Emmys Fund. And anyone interested on getting on the mailing list for the book, they can do so. They can drop me a line over at ArticHousePublishing@gmail.com, and they can just ask to be put on the Epic Dog Tales publication mailing list.
Wow, that is a whole bunch of stuff. Can I interrupt just for a second, Nancy?
Yes, please do. I think I'm running out of air.
No problem. I don't know if it's you or Sue or either one of you guys playing the broadcast back, and if you are, press pause because we're hearing it double on my end.
No, not me, and I don't hear it.
Okay, I hear it on my end.
No, I'm not hearing it either.
Okay, so it's probably just me, so I apologize to our listeners if they did in fact hear it, but if not, no big deal. We're all good. But I do have a question now that we're kind of at a stopping point of your intro, Dorothy. I've wanted to ask you this in the past, but is the Purple Day with Epi and Epi Dogs in any relation towards all of the awareness for people epilepsy? Is it the same time of the month? Do you know? Is it the same type of campaigns?
Yes, actually, it is one and the same campaign. During the month for March, Purple Day, that we were talking about, that was formed by the young girl, Cassie Megan, it is actually human epilepsy. And if anyone goes to purpleday.org, they can see a lot of different, there's educational material, there's, you know, she has a blog now where she talks about it. You know, it's just the whole connection really is global for human. And then I came into it and became an ambassador to cover the canine epilepsy aspect.
Exactly.
So that's where we've joined on that, because to let people know that there is also canine epilepsy, and there is a whole movement of awareness out there, not just myself, but, you know, I know a lot of people know that I do, but there are a lot of other people who do it as well, and that's why I joined forces with them, and they've been wonderful. They've posted the video on their page. You know, they've shared our page and link and put up information that, you know, epilepsy also affects canines as well.
Awesome. I've always wanted to ask you that. I just didn't know if there was a correlation between the people and the dogs on the same day, but now we know, so very good. Any other announcements, or can we go right into introducing our guest?
No, I just want to say that there's also another site, Epilepsy Education Support, that's been really great, too, and they also have been human-oriented, but they have now picked up a lot of our canine epilepsy posts and have shared that, and we're greatly appreciative to both of Purple Day for Epilepsy as well as Epilepsy Education Support. And again, it's that joining of human and canine. November is the same thing. They're both actually epilepsy awareness times, but we're bringing in the canine aspect, which actually ties in perfect to our guest. On two accounts, one of the stories that's included in my book is about the Mighty Quinn, a once-abandoned American Eskimo dog who came to know love and wonderful life as part of the White Dog Army of today's guest, which is Susan C. High Smith and her husband, Steve, who are founders of the Paws to People, Bridges to Cures nonprofit organization that's based in New Mexico. As both president and founder, Sue says that she believes that each person has an obligation to work toward making the world a better place, and that a measure of one's character is the effort and focus applied to making a difference. A writer and artist, an animal rescuer, and grassroots activist, she says, and I quote, "Who I am has been shaped by a drive to connect, educate, share, and challenge," end quote. Susan is university trained and has worked in the creative department, creative development of supplemental middle school math and science materials, where she wrote, oversaw, and development of and or spearheaded production of nearly 150 products, many cross-curricular. As a creative director for 23 years, she also had plenty of experience in awareness and advertising campaign development, print generation, and in reworking complex concepts into understandable eureka moments for the average person. She has 5 years of previous active experience in raising awareness and fundraising for the cause of comparative studies, specifically comparative oncology. She introduced the concept to the general public in Albuquerque and for 3 years spearheaded events to spread the word and fundraise for a national organization's New Mexico chapter. With them, she planned events, produced marketing campaigns, and all the ancillary materials to implement them. She gathered an awesome group of volunteers and established relationships that followed her into this new organization. As a writer, Sue says the use of words to spur action and to make the complicated clear makes her effective and evocative. To convince someone else to do the right thing and become involved is one of the most rewarding tasks, she says, she can imagine. She writes a daily blog called The White Dog Diary, and that's at www.whitedogblog.blogspot.com, and it is based on her family's life and crossing into the things she says they believe, the causes they fight for, and the need to make the world a better place. She has written an alternative energy lifestyle blog for The Examiner that encourages awareness of the practical side of alternative energy and reduction of awareness, and reduction of the energy use. Sue says that she and her husband Steve, quote, walk the talk as they have PV panels on the roof. Her husband has an electric car, a Zap Zebra, and they reuse, recycle, and reduce their carbon footprint wherever possible. Their family consists of Steve and Sue, six American Eskimo dogs, five are rescues, and their 22-year-old autistic nephew. Sue and I became acquainted through her White Dog Diary blog, and our connection is moms to dogs with canine epilepsy, her American Eskimo fur angel, the Mighty Quinn, and Mike Gibson. She started Paws to People last June because she says she is dedicated to making a difference in ending catastrophic disease. And we're going to jump right in with that because that's going to talk about that connection that we just did between human and canine with these type of diseases. So without further delay, I'd like to really extend a warm welcome to Susan C. High Smith. Susan, welcome to this very special episode of the Sci-Vibe.
Thank you so much, Dorothy, and hi, Robert.
Robert, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Okay.
I am well, thank you.
Good.
Now, Sue, let's start by having you tell us about each member of the White Dog Army. I know we're on the blog together, and you have a lot of followers, and, you know, we have some listeners who may not be familiar with it, and I just thought it'd be really nice if you kind of introduce them and the meaning or importance of their names. And I believe I have them all, and I hope I say them right. If I don't, feel free to correct me. Siku Marie, Fur Angel the Mighty Quinn, Fur Angel Nuka, Puff the Magical, Yo-Yo Mom, Oso, Taiko, and your newest member, Bella?
That's pretty much their names. Our American Eskimos, of course, as you probably know, are cousins to the Siberian Husky. They're in the same family of northern breed dogs. They have a lot of the same attitudes and a lot of the same characteristics. So when you speak about the Sci Vibe, the Esky Vibe isn't that far off from that.
And, you know, we all know exactly what you mean by that.
I knew from your laugh that you did. Sika Marie is my diva. She's the first American Eskimo that we had. She came to me as a puppy, and like everyone's first child, she's a genius, overindulged, definitely lived a life of privilege. But amazingly enough, she's adapted and opened her heart to become the leader of the White Dog Army. She came to us after our rescue Sheltie died from liver cancer, which we'll talk about in a little while, and I had sort of shut down emotionally and decided that I was not going to invest myself in getting hurt. Again, Siku means ice in Athapascan, and her name reflects the way that I felt when she came and melted my heart. The Marie is a funny family tradition. I come from a family of six girls, and it's a good Catholic family, so we all had a whole string of, you know, middle names and confirmation names.
Right.
And my mother would get flustered when something, you know, something or someone had gone awry. And in calling us all in, she would finally just give up the long names, and we would all have Marie as a middle name. So it would become Susan Marie, Mary Marie, Nancy Marie. So in that same tradition, all of the White Dog Army has the middle name Marie.
You know, I'm actually glad that you explained it because I saw on Quinn's tribute it was the Mighty Quinn Marie, now it makes sense.
Well, and they all know that when I get to the point that I'm calling Siku Marie or, you know, Oso Marie, that somebody's in trouble. So
the uh-oh moment.
The uh-oh moment. The Mighty Quinn, of course, comes from the song. I met my first Esky, when I was in college, and it was the most beautiful dog I had ever seen. And I was in a band at that point, as most people are when they're in college, and that was one of the cover songs that we did, and I always had in the back of my mind that if I ever owned an American Eskimo, it would be the Mighty Quinn. And he came with this incredible story of a whole community helping him come to us, and he truly was mighty. So he became the Mighty Quinn. Nuka Angel was my deaf girl, and her name was Angel. She's the only dog that came with a name that we changed, that we knew that we changed. And our our feeling was that she wouldn't mind because she was deaf. Nuka means little sister in one of the Eskimo native languages. So Nuka Angel was her name. She has also crossed the bridge. Puff the Magical came to us as a breeder dog from Kansas who had been basically abandoned and was living out of doors. And she came to us stage 3 heartworm positive, and she was 14 at the time. And our vet said that it was absolutely amazing that she survived what she went through. And she's has a lot of bronchial scarring, but she's my toughest little fighter ever, and she truly is magical. So that explains her name. Yo-Yo Ma is my blind boy. He is the dog that goes running with my husband in the mornings. He's an awesome inspiration. He does not play the cello, but he's working on that.
Now, how many times do you get asked that, right?
Well, you know, the funniest thing is one of our fellow bloggers for years thought his name was Yo Mama. When she finally convinced that or confessed that, I was just overwhelmed with thinking how funny it was. But
oh, that is.
But no, he is Yo-Yo Ma, and when we accent the last, it's like Marie in the same aspect. Oso is actually Oso the Fearless. He's my little boy. He's tiny. He's the only rescue we have actually from Albuquerque, but Steve and I, when we went to pick him up at the shelter, had developed a whole elaborate plan, as you're supposed to do, about introducing a new dog to the house and such, and how we were going to do that in the backyard and then in the front porch. And anyway, he walked right into the house, put down his bag, said, "I'm here." Everybody said, "Oh, okay, finally." And life was good in about 5 minutes, despite our well-laid plan. So my little man is totally fearless. Tycho was sent to Steve from Quinn because Steve and Quinn were heart bonded, and Quinn's loss was really hard for Steve, and Quinn couldn't stand that, so he sent us Tycho the Tenderheart. And he was a rescue boy from Kentucky who had also been abandoned and was living outdoors, and he was a total mess, and he's slowly warming to the learning how to be social and how to be part of the pack, and it's an amazement to watch him every day make the adjustment that he's making. So he's sort of awesome to see. And finally, Bella, who's only been with us since Thanksgiving, is actually Bella e Primoroso, who in Italian is beautiful and caring. And she was also a little breeder girl. She's our tiny dancer. She's about 12 pounds, and she's fierce as long as she's under my chair. we're working on that. That's my pack.
That's your pack. Now, I know we were brought together by the pet blogging community and our commonality of being parents to an epi dog. Before we chat about Quinn and his epilepsy, can you tell me about the importance of being part of such a community, the benefits of being connected to others in good times and bad?
You know, our blog community is just so wonderful. If the rest of the world could just peek in for a couple of weeks, I think we could change the way we interact with each other globally.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the sharing that goes on. I mean, at a very genuine level, even though most of us have never seen each other in person or pet out each other's dogs, you know, we're there for all of the highlights. We're there for all of the sad moments. We're there for all the glad moments. We're supportive. We're generous when someone has a catastrophe that needs help. We're free with our advice. We're free with our experience. It's a very uplifting environment to be part of.
Now, what made you first decide to start writing the White Dog Diary blog?
When Siku came to me as a puppy, Steve had tried to talk me into writing a blog before, and that was not really my interest. And I'm really not much of a techno whiz, so the idea of even writing on the computer was sort of intimidating to me. But when Siku came, I sort of sighed and said, well, you know, this is a great opportunity to document Siku's life and to have a bit of writing practice every day. And you'll laugh at this, but for the first 2 years of her life, I would handwrite in an actual diary and then go to the computer and translate onto her blog what I had written, because I just could not think with the computer screen in front of me. I had to actually handwrite it. So
I feel like a book in her future, you know, the Diary of Siku.
I actually have, you know, several diaries on the bookshelf from her early years that are fading and handwritten, but they do tell her story, going from a sassy little pup to the elegant woman that she is now. So
now, Sue, your blog posts, and for anyone who reads them, they really are like vignettes, little life stories. And how did you come to decide that this was the voice that you wanted to write with?
It wasn't so much a decision as considering, well, first of all, let me start by saying that when I started blogging almost 3,500 posts ago, people
Congratulations, that's amazing.
Thank you so much. People didn't even show photos of people in their dog photos. I mean, they would hold up, you know, plates, or they would put their arm in front of their face, and it was sort of verboten to show humans. But it occurred to me that how can you tell the story of your dog, or how can you share your dog's life without putting it in a context, without giving the dog an environment and talking about their families and how they interact and their personalities and how it all fits together in this sort of seamless whole completeness. So that from that, I sort of just developed naturally the idea that this is Siku's life. This is what she experiences.
Now, today is, as we know, Purple Day for Epilepsy Awareness, and our listeners are going to be listening to this on Sunday, so it'll be a couple days later. But I think it's fitting that we talk about your fur angel, the Mighty Quinn, today, you know, who suffered from epilepsy. And, I actually want to change that from suffering, because, you know, I like to think that who lived with epilepsy, because I think we're trying to change that, you know, connotation to the disorder. Can you tell our readers the nature of his seizures, how often he had them, and, you know, a little bit about that?
Right, and I think the point that you make is a good one to start with, that it's not really suffering for the most part. His epilepsy for most of his two and a half years that he lived with it, that we had him diagnosed, was not so much a matter of suffering. It was adapting and living with it and living life. So mm-hmm. It was not until the end that there was actually any suffering involved. Quinn had what's considered to be partial or focal seizures that mm-hmm. are abnormal electrical activity arising in a small part of the brain. The type that he had are called complex focal seizures that originate in part of the brain that controls emotions and behavior. So when Quinn had a seizure, he would pace incessantly, or he would turn in circles, or he would do some senseless repetitive behavior. Amazingly enough, as I got involved with Positive People, I found out that people have these same types of as seizures as well. And the humans often experience hallucinations. In the dog world, there's a possibility that dogs, when they have these type of seizures, snap. And the diagnosis at one time was that they were becoming aggressive. But modern canine psychology is tending toward the fact that they're hallucinating and they're snapping at flying things, at flies. In fact, it's called now fly snapping. So the dog's not aggressively trying to bite their owners or people around them, but they're seeing these things attacking them, and that's what they're snapping at. So
wow. That's really interesting. I was not aware of that.
It's amazing when you start to look at the crossover research that's being done now, and we'll talk more about that, I know. But at first, Quinn's seizures were relatively infrequent, once every couple of months or so. And then, you know, over a period of time, the medication handled things. The last 6 months or so, his seizures became more frequently. And then toward the end, they were predecessors toward or two general cluster seizures that last couple of weeks of his life.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of treatments and medication he was on, if he was on any?
He took gabapentin, which is a medication that was actually developed in the human world for epilepsy, and he received K-laser therapy mm-hmm. with the understanding that it would help stimulate the nerve endings along his spine to bring the nerve reception more all the way down his body instead of locking up at his shoulders or, you know, his mid-waist. He had a lot of trouble when he was having seizures with losing leg strength, so that mm-hmm. helped that. Later on, we progressed to Keppra, which is a relatively new drug. He wasn't really on it long enough for us to determine that that was, you know, effective or not. And then
okay.
at the end, of course, he was cluster seizing, so we had to let him go.
Now, at some point, as with many EpiDog parents, emergency treatment comes in the form of self-dosing under their, you know, original guidance of our vets. Many have Valium on hand for those critical days, and many of us
right.
have Epi first aid kits at the ready, and in the freezers we have natural ice cream and ice packs, and, you know, I know, like, we have cases of frozen veggies and a loaf of Italian bread because that's what all I had to use for Gibson when he first started. But, you know, you use what you can when it's an emergency.
Exactly.
And what would you say is the most important thing you've discovered through your care of Quinn that was critical for you to have on hand or to know?
The most critical thing to know was that touch was incredibly important to grounding him and speaking to him as a matter of calling him back. Often touching him and speaking to him was enough to bring him out of a seizure. But during those times when it wasn't enough, most certainly we had, you know, the frozen vegetable trick that I learned from you works fabulously. I recommend it to everyone. Get that bag of lima beans you're never going to eat and just keep them in the freezer.
That's right.
Yeah, we had ice cream because afterwards he was voraciously hungry, and it turns out, as I've done my research, that there's such a sugar drop because it's a metabolic slam to go through a seizure that they really do need that sudden rush of glucose.
Mm-hmm.
And then just understanding that his desire to be isolated afterwards, go off by himself and sleep soundly, was not a reason for panic. I think fighting panic is the toughest thing that EpiDog owners have to come to terms with.
Oh, you're so right. I mean, when I reflect back on when Gibson has first one, I like to think of myself as a level-headed person who does extremely well in emergencies, and I was so blindsided by that. I don't even think I recognized myself from that day. You know, and again, I think knowledge is power, and the more we learn, the more we share, the more we talk about it, I think the better we all are equipped to hopefully put that panic at bay and just do what we have to do for our dogs. I think that's really important. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is the Sci-Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and today is March 26th, Purple Day for Epilepsy Awareness. And Robert and I are chatting with Susan Sehi Smith, who writes the White Dog Diary blog at www.whitedogblog.blogspot.com and is the president and founder of Paws to People, Bridges to Cures, a nonprofit organization that is committed to furthering comparative studies research in catastrophic diseases such as epilepsy and cancer. You can follow Paws to People on Facebook of the same name or on their website at www.bridgestocures.org. So having a good vet, you know, who's well-versed on seizure disorders is a must. And I think we're both lucky. Excuse me, everyone. Sorry about that. I think we're both lucky that we have wonderful vets. And I do hear stories from readers who, you know, they'll feel like they may be at a loss for help. What would you recommend to these people to do or where to go for assistance?
The first thing I would recommend to anyone in that situation is to talk to every person who will listen and to tell their story, because you never know where a connection is going to be made or where someone is going to say, well, you know, I had a dog like that, or my mother had a dog like that, And through that, we gain so much insight. I mean, that, again, is one of the great values of the blog community, is we have this vast network that we can say, does anyone else have a dog who fill in the blank?
Mm-hmm.
So talk to people about it. Don't be embarrassed. That's one of the problems of epilepsy in the human realm, is that there's still this stigma involved with it. You know, get past that. You know, we're talking about lives that can be changed and made better if we're you know, have conversations and we're vocal about it.
Right,
and also
excellent.
Consider go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, excellent point. And I apologize. I think we have a slight delay. So I think I might cross over you at times, so I apologize ahead of time. But I just wanted to say that was an excellent point.
Oh, well, thank you. And then also consider outside-the-box thinking, because a lot of things that are not yet accepted as, you know, totally establishment thinking are still things that may prove to be helpful. For example, we found, and our vet is incredibly open to holistic solutions and alternative medicine in addition to traditional veterinary treatment. But we found through her guidance that aromatherapy was very helpful in getting Quinn to be calm. Because, as you know, one of the major causes of any kind of seizure is simply stress.
Mm-hmm.
So when Quinn would get stressed, we found that a little bit of lavender or, you know, a little aromatherapy in general really helped him to step back from the edge enough that we had time to take him out of the stressful situation or to somehow alter things to not push him over the edge.
That's right, yeah. You're so right, stress really is, because Gibson's, when he was in, it was a month following his grandma, he wound up going into cluster seizures, and they weren't stopping. We actually had to rush him to the emergency vet in between clusters, and we had major construction going on in our house at that time, and we had a roof out over, we were building a roof out over our deck for them, because my husband's like, you know what, you know, if it's raining, we didn't want them to get wet, and they could still go outside, so we gave them our side of the deck, and we actually went and constructed a roof, never thinking this was, you know, going to cause any kind of problem. But it was stress on different levels because, A, you have the noise and you have this constant hammering and tearing down and building up of things. And then the second part was that was actually their domain. So now he was out of his norm. And,
exactly.
You know, he just went into the clusters. And, of course, right now we're having some construction done again, so I'm always holding my breath and I'm moving him all the time. And he's looking at me, and, you know, he's medicated now, and, you know, I like to say he's managed my medications. He does have a lot of, you know, the hind-end weaknesses, and he just went for his first in-home laser today since falling. But, you know, I still, it brings me back to such a place of fear from when it started, knowing stress of construction was one of his triggers. So I'm moving him all the time today, like, okay, we're going out here. Okay, come on, let's go over here. You know, and moving him right now is like moving a 95-pound furry suitcase, because I have to keep him in a sling harness because of his hind end injury. And it's probably halfway through the day, he looked at me like, really, Mom? Really? So I think he's fine. But, you know, I'm probably a little overcompensating, because I just, it takes me right back to that spot where stress of something as simple that you wouldn't think of as construction really threw him into some serious seizures.
Well, and there's nothing worse than living through cluster seizing. I mean, I think that's the most incredibly horrific 5 minutes of anyone's life that they would experience. So I'm totally understanding.
Now, what steps did you go through once you knew Quinn was about to or started to have a seizure?
Well, like I said, that touching him, so first of all, putting arms around him, not restraining him, but letting him feel our embrace, and talking to him was our starting point. If we could get him to break the repetitive pattern, we usually were able to get him past the seizure pretty easily. The nice thing about gabapentin is that, unlike some of the traditional epilepsy treatments for dogs, phenobarbital and such, there's a certain immediate flexibility in being able to change dosage. So we could increase his dosage on the spot if that was necessary, so without it having, you know, any sort of overlapping effect over any time. So we could almost double his dosage, you know, for a couple of days, and then ease back to where he was, and that would help compensate for whatever his body was going through that was pushing him to that edge. Besides that, making sure that he had lots of space, he always wanted to be part of the pack, but when he knew that he was coming into difficulties, he wanted to be there, but he wanted to have his own space. So being aware of that was important to allow him then to be part of the pack without having to really interact.
Well, it actually raises another really good question because, you know, we always hear, you know, about, of course, you know, we should remove our epi dog from other dogs because, you know, they may get confused and they could possibly go after the dog that is seizing. How did his epilepsy affect, if at all, your other dogs in the pack?
You know, it was absolutely amazing, and it's the thing that I go back to again and again in my blog is how absolutely compassionate dogs can be. Part of the complex focal seizures is that Quinn would go out into the yard and he would, you know, run in circles, but then he would become disoriented and not be able to find his way back in. Nuka was his best friend and guide, and she would go out there and she would just stand on the deck while he was having his moment. And then when he would calm down and just be standing lost, she would actually go and nuzzle his side and lead him back in. It was the most amazing thing. And she did that time and time again. It wasn't just an isolated case. And the other dogs, again, when they knew that he was seizing, would want to be there. They would want to be in the room. They would want to be part of what was happening. But they knew not to rush up to him or interfere with what he needed to do. And they seemed to know that instinctively. It wasn't something that we trained them to do. And really, even up until his end, I mean, they were present when the vet came to the house and Quinn crossed the bridge, and they all sat respectfully around the chair that he and I were sitting in. It was amazing.
Wow. They really are something. I sometimes think that many times think that we can certainly learn an awful lot from them. Now, many of your dogs have or have had special needs, and you have personal experience with two catastrophic diseases, epilepsy and cancer, in both the human and canine worlds. Quinn, as we just talked about, was an epileptic, and your fur angel, Sheltie Sheena, was diagnosed with and ultimately succumbed to cancer. And you also lost, an aunt to uterine cancer. How did each of these diseases and passings affect you?
For my aunt, which was the first of the three that you mentioned, it was an amazing experience because ultimately we brought her home and hospiced her in the house back in Chicago where she lived. And her sense of relief just being out of the hospital environment to spend her last days in her own room with the windows open and such was an amazing thing to be a part of. But it also made me question, first of all, the diagnosis. They gave her 6 months. She lasted 5 years. Secondly, the fact that here we have been 40 years and we haven't come up with any better solutions in treating cancer than cut it out, radiate it, or give it chemotherapy. And it's not solving the problem. So it made me aware of that as a starting point. And then when Sheena was diagnosed with cancer, she was diagnosed basically on her deathbed. I mean, she had stopped eating, and we thought it was just an old age issue. We were so naive at that point that we took her to the vet, and Dr. Skanes, our wonderful vet, called to say that she had done some x-rays and saw an obstruction, but she really couldn't tell what it was, and she felt that she was strong enough and could she go in and take a look at it, and we gave her permission to do that. And she called not even an hour later to say that, oh my gosh, I've never seen a dog so shot full of cancer. I can't believe this girl is even walking, much less, you know, having survived. And it was liver cancer that had spread incredibly, and I had to make a horrible judgment call about whether to sew her up and bring her back for a couple of weeks of life under complete medication where she would be out of the picture, whether we would leave her on life support until we could get there to say goodbye, or whether we should just gracefully let her go, which was a decision that we made, and it was a really tough one. And Quinn, again, was eye-opening. It's amazing how much we don't know about the world. We think we do, but we don't. And the idea that dogs even could get epilepsy was something that was unknown to us until we actually started reading your blog. So we had at least a little bit of foreknowledge of knowing when he started having seizures that there was that potential. So, and all three of those events are basically what pushed us towards getting involved in comparative studies research.
So with your background and these own experiences that you had dealing with these catastrophic illnesses, obviously it was the springboard into creating your nonprofit, Pause to People, Bridges to Cures organization. You said, and I quote, "One person, one dog at a time, joining energies with another, and then another, to find an end to the reign of terror caused by catastrophic diseases, builds to a group, and then to a movement, and then to a solid bridge, and finally to a conquering force. Pause to People has an amazing potential to reach, inform, and motivate people to support comparative research and to change the world." Can you explain to our readers exactly what is meant by comparative research?
I would love to. Comparative research is an amazing, hopeful form of a new paradigm in the way we look at illness and treatment. The similarities and resemblances of many diseases that occur in both animals and humans are so numerous that the diseases are virtually identical. And now that we have the science to look at the very smallest parts of ourselves, like MRIs, and we've completely mapped the human and the canine genome, it's apparent that the disease processes are also the same. So the idea of comparative research is that we not look at the species, that we focus on the disease. So comparative research uses that as a starting point, and then it proceeds to compassionately study naturally occurring diseases in veterinary and human medicine, with the goal of sharing and building from discoveries cooperatively to form a bridge in finding causes, preventions, therapies, and cures for catastrophic diseases like cancer, like epilepsy, like dementia, like Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. arthritis. There's a whole list of those diseases. So if we look at domestic pets in general, like our dogs, they offer us this tremendous insight because they live our lives, basically. They live in our environments. They suffer our stresses. They walk in our fertilized grass. They drive in our cars. They eat our leftovers. They're models of the human experience that, because of their shorter lifespan, run in fast forward. Mm-hmm. So comparative studies research uses that natural link to explore real-world impact on how disease is generated, how it grows, and how it can be eradicated for both humans and pets.
Now, you've said comparative research connects humans back to the rest of the planet. It raises our companion animals to a new equality of partnership that they deserve. It makes it possible to build bridges to cures. As the lives of dogs who have epilepsy, cancer, and so on that we've mentioned are being studied, how does this research help both humans and canines? You know, and what is the connection there? I mean, I know, and I mean more from finding the cure as opposed to them living our experience.
Let me give you a couple of examples. First of all, we've already talked about the fact that the epilepsy drug that Quinn was on, his meds came from the human realm. So there's the start of a bridge there already. And that's the case with several different diseases and medications. Dementia drugs share back and forth from canine to human and human to canine and are effective in both realms. The University of Missouri and the University of Toronto united, and in a study they announced that the first of this year, that the first genes responsible for epilepsy syndrome in dogs has been pinpointed. It's in a comparable area to where the gene mutation falls for Lafora disease in people. And Lafora disease is an extreme form of epilepsy in humans. So that's a sign in the comparative realm that they're looking in the right area of the brain, and that that area of the brain is the area of the brain, whether it's a dog or whether it's a human, and that's where we're going to find answers. My favorite example of comparative studies at work is Dr. Withrow from Colorado State University is one of the pioneers, he just recently retired, of comparative oncology in the United States. And he developed a protocol for treating osteosarcoma bone cancer in large breed dogs. Large breed dogs are most susceptible to bone cancer in the canine world. Anyway, his protocol was life limb saving. He no longer used taking the limb as the first line of defense in battling cancer. And as a result, dogs' lives were saved, but also they didn't lose their limbs. But during the process, the pediatrics medical group at CSU said, you know, a large dog's bone structure, its length, its density is the same size as young children, and we can look at that. And they did, and they took Dr. Withrow's studies and they looked at it, and they adapted his same protocols to treat human children so that 12-year-old kids weren't losing their legs to bone cancer.
That's amazing. I mean, the connection is just, it's incredible. Well, the positiveness of this in the future, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, where do you see this going?
I think that this is a new way to look at medicine. And one of my favorite jokes is what do veterinarians call human doctors?
What?
And the answer is that it's a veterinarian that treats only one species. And when you think about it, and the reality is, up until urbanization of America, that when you were on a farm and something happened, the guy that you called to fix your broken leg or the guy that you called to fix your horse was the same guy. And it wasn't until we started separating our connection to the rest of the planet that we developed this specialty called human medicine. And I think that the hope of comparative research is that we go back to that network, to that big picture view.
Now, for those who are just tuning in, this is the Side Vibe on DogWorks Radio, and today is March 26, Purple Day for Epilepsy Awareness. And Robert and I are chatting with Susan Sehy Smith, who writes the White Dog Diary blog at www.whitedogblog.blogspot.com and is the president and founder of Paws to People, Bridges to Cures, a nonprofit organization that is committed to furthering comparative studies research in catastrophic diseases such as epilepsy and cancer. You can follow Paws to People on Facebook of the same name or on their website at www.bridgestocures.org. Now, Sue, you've held a number of successful Paws to People events already. Can you tell us a little bit about them, including the most recent one you had where I'm thrilled to report you had told me that 35 people in attendance were wearing our Five Sides Purple Live Give Strong Canine Epilepsy Awareness Bracelets. That's fantastic.
We were so thrilled. That was on the 16th of March. We had a Founders Day celebration to celebrate my birthday, and the theme was epilepsy awareness, and it was a party in the park, and we had music, and we had breakdancers, and we had party games, and people came with their dogs, and one of the party games was a scavenger hunt to find information about epilepsy that we had hidden around the park in sort of a scavenger hunt type game. And another was a selfies where you had to take your cell phone camera and take pictures of yourself and your dog at different specified places across the park that also were related to epilepsy. So those were the two parts of the event that were totally related to Purple Day. And the great thing was in the little party take-home bags was the Gibstrong Purple brochure that talks about epilepsy awareness in canines and your purple bracelet. And it was wonderful to walk around the park to see people wearing the bracelet. They had taken it out of the bag, put it on their wrists, and everyone was actually amazed. I mean, awareness – is the most important thing that we're doing right now is raising awareness.
To me, it's
astonishing how much people don't know. Even when we spoke to the human epilepsy group, they didn't know the dogs got epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I do hear that often myself.
So to raise awareness, not just about epilepsy, but that's across, we find that across the board. And our message at the most basic level is the first best line of defense against catastrophic disease is good health, fitness, good nutrition, and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, from the human point of view, from the canine point of view, it's the same thing. It's the same four things. So that's our starting point, whether it's an epilepsy event, whether it's a cancer warriors vigil, whatever the event is, that's what we stress, is that by the time you're laying on a that table being diagnosed, you've missed a lot of opportunity to fight the disease. Some of the other things that we've done, or the other things that we've done to raise awareness, have been just, you know, simply a health fair, a canine health fair. We've had a fun hot dogs and music afternoon where the student nurses at my husband's school came out with their blood pressure equipment and took blood pressures on humans and it did, you know, fat density measurements and such. And the vet techs were there doing lymph node tests and teeth checks on the dogs. And it was all within this kind of fun picnic setting. So it was kind of a fun, painless way to get across the message of good health being important in fighting disease.
I want to come to New Mexico and come to one of these events.
We would love to have you.
Now, and it's a wonderful way because you're incorporating fun and activities at the same time, instilling awareness. And, you know, when someone's having a good time and then they relate it right to that event, that's a win-win situation. It really is. Now, do you have any other events coming up? Or for folks who don't live in the area, is there a way that they can help fundraise for you or participate?
Well, by the time this airs, we will have walked in the Epilepsy Walk here in New Mexico, the Human Epilepsy Walk on the 29th, which is Saturday. And for the first time ever, they are now aware of EpiDogs and the fact that epilepsy is a canine issue. And we will have dogs walking at the walk, so that's kind of an exciting thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's very exciting.
So we're thrilled about that. We're hoping to do an event on post-traumatic stress disorder because, again, dogs and humans both suffer from the disease. In May, we're going to have a Carnival of Hope for cancer awareness. Right now, in terms of fundraising, we're handicapped because we're playing the government game of waiting for our pending 501c3. So our application is in. It's just a matter of the time for processing. So at the point that we become properly certified, we can then go out and ask for donations and solicit people to donate to the cause. But in the meantime, our focus is on just getting the word out there and raising awareness.
Wonderful. Now, Robert, before I actually wrap up with Sue, is there anything that you wanted to ask her or add to this?
No, I really enjoy the conversation. I've learned so much about canine epilepsy since hosting this show with you. We've had a dog or two in training at our training school that's had epilepsy, and through my awareness by listening to you guys has helped tremendously.
That's wonderful. I mean, I always think if we can reach one person, you know, who maybe before or during that they're having this experience with it, then I think we've done a great job, right, Sue?
Well, you know, Dorothy, that's one wonderful story that I'd like to share about the party in the park where we had your wristbands, is that from that and from the conversations that took place across that day, one family did actually take their dog to the vet because they felt that enough of what we talked about matched what the dog's behavior was, that they wanted to have that checked out. So it turned out that their pup did not have an epilepsy profile, but it did turn out that she had Cushing's. So because of that, we got that dog to the vet. We got it checked out. They knew what questions to ask and what direction to steer the vet in. So exactly, if we can make a difference in one dog, we're doing a great thing for the day.
Absolutely. Now, Sue, I love your quote. And I'm going to quote right now, and that is the wonder and excitement of comparative research to me. It is not about dog disease or people disease. It is about ending diseases, period, end quote. And that is our hope for both our fellow two-legged friends as well as our four-legged ones. And, you know, one day there will be cures. And for our listeners, I'd like to just let them know that there's going to be an in-depth interview with Sue in an upcoming post on my Five Sides blog at fivesides.blogspot.com that will also contain links, you know, to her Paws to People, Bridges to Cures page, and also to her White Dog Diary. And, you know, we'll also be sharing all this, of course, on our Five Sides Facebook and Twitter pages. So please be sure to check back on that. And, Sue, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing all this information. I think it's extremely valuable. And, you know, I really commend you and Steve for the work that you're doing. And hopefully a lot of dog lives will be saved as a result of it. Just keep doing the amazing work you're doing, you know, on behalf of animals and people.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the opportunity, both Dorothy and Robert. This was a great chance to, again, get the word out and raise awareness, hopefully.
Great.
Thank you so much, Sue. Thank you, Sue. Dorothy, we have just about 30 seconds or so left. What's coming up next month on the Side Vibe?
I do have a guest for next month, High Five, and you won't believe it, I don't have it in front of me, so you actually caught me off guard.
No problem. We'll announce it on our show page for sure. So, Dorothy, it was a pleasure as always. Sue, nice meeting you here on the radio show, and we wish you well in all of your endeavors over there, Sue.
And the same to you. I'm glad that the season is just about over. I'm sure a little break will be much appreciated.
Yes, then we can start on our summer chores up here. So it's never ending for sure. Ladies, thank you very much. Dorothy, we'll talk again soon, okay?
Sounds great. Take care. Bye, Robert. Bye, Sue.
Goodbye.
Bye now.
And on behalf of the Side Vibe, this is Robert Forto. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.